Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have quite a founder. Let me tell you, quite the founder. You know, he's built his company from the ground up. You know, he started the company with just $3,000 and now they're north of $400 million in revenue without taking, by the way, venture capital money or anything, you know, really to run the business. I mean, obviously they have PEs now, but private equity firms, but that's a different story. So in our session today, you know, in this incredible conversation that we have ahead of us, we're going to be talking about how to think about culture, how also to think about culture when you're thinking about bringing external money, how you're thinking about do the needs of the clients and really understanding them, as well as mentoring people. So again, really incredible and inspiring conversation in front of us. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Dave Dickerson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So originally born in California, you know, and raised in the suburbs of LA. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
I was actually raised by a single mom and my grandmother, actually in a Hispanic household. You wouldn't know that to look at me, but actually my mom was from Yucatan. So grew up very working class family.
And I guess, what did you get, you know, from the hard work and the, you know, being in the U.S., the American dream? I mean, all of that stuff. What did you get from that, too?
Yeah. I mean, my mom and my grandmother who came over to be with her very much believed in the American dream and what was possible by working hard.
So then, you know, like you ended up going to school, you know, you ended up going, you know, to school very much. So in Orange County. And then you decided to stay. But one of the things that is very interesting is that rather than going at it, you know, in the corporate world, you thought that it would be interesting to get, you know, into manufacturing, you know, stuff around saunas and steam rooms. And how was that experience like? You know, that was your first rodeo.
Yeah, it was one of those things where if you would have asked me a year before I got into it, is this something I would be doing? I probably wouldn't have ever imagined it. I actually, while I was in college, what happened, I was working for an exercise company, fitness company, and they had an ancillary business that the founder had at built saunas. And so when I left that business, I actually had people I had sold saunas to who did not want to work with that founder anymore and had found me and had asked me, can you start building these rooms for me? And with literally, no experience, I found someone who had experience in the construction and went out, bid it, got the job. And that particular day when I went out and sold that room, I ended up selling three more because there was a lot of construction going on. And so it kind of just evolved from that standpoint.
So eventually, as they say, you know, you either succeed or you learn. You know, you eventually had to, you guys had to shut down the company. But what was the lessons, you know, that you took from that experience?
That one was actually a lot of learning as far as the understanding the what I needed as far as inventory control, you know, how we market, you know, selling. It was actually a good experience. I mean, ultimately, it, you know, we had to shut it down because of the recession in the early 90s, but it was actually a very good experience for us. I mean, it taught me a lot of different attributes of the business. So it's one of those things where I kind of know enough of everything, but I'm not particularly an expert in anything.
And I believe so that, you know, giving you that visibility into other stuff too, you know, what came next, you know, which was also consulting. I mean, you did consulting, you know, with pharma companies and other segments, you know, that perhaps, you know, gave you more visibility. I guess, you know, when you do consulting too, it gives you an understanding on how to be able to as well break, you know, big problems into smaller problems and really and how to tackle them. So what would you say that you got from that journey to being a consultant?
So I basically, from a sales standpoint, I learned how to develop territories. I understood the really listening to clients, what their needs were. And so I was able to translate that into different industries. Again, I was into a pharmaceutical small pharmaceutical here in Orange County that was looking to build an inside sales program. I was hired on, built that whole program for them, left after about a year. And then I ended up with another company that was a data public records aggregator that was doing the same thing. They were trying to build an inside sales program.
And obviously this was a pivotal for you because it was ultimately what ended up leading you to Accurate Background. So
correct.
What were the sequences of events, you know, until you were like, okay, I think it's time to build something here.
Right. So when I was working with them, one of the products that we were selling was the skip tracing tool. And the primary buyers were banks and private investigators. And I was working with the private investigator group. And they weren't buying a lot of this product because they weren't locating people in masses. They, you know, they would do maybe four or five a month. And this was a product that was like $5. And the company was struggling to find other products to sell them. So I started asking the clients I was working with, what products do you use a lot of? And they would always come back that they were looking for criminal records at the county level. And they were looking for a good source. And they would run, you know, 100 of these a month. And they were experiencing wait times of about 3 weeks. They didn't think the data was that good. So I started investigating it. And I realized the company I was had that product, but it was, you would quote 3 weeks and it was a very expensive product. So I started learning the reason it was taking so long was very manual process. And it would actually, when you order something, it would actually go through a number of people before you actually ever get it back. So it's constantly being transferred. So the more touches that you had, the more chances you're going to have for errors in the delay of time. So I started looking at this and said, you know, we could actually streamline this process, bring the cost down, be the very profitable product and offer it to the clients. And I presented it to management. They were not interested. You know, they thought it was just a very manual process. So having been on my own, I saw the opportunity here. And so I left.
So then you leave. And then what happened next?
So that's actually an interesting story. So I, you know, the story of this is I started on a Thursday. I had about 20 searches and I was just doing it on Excel, you know, and, you know, Microsoft Word, building my reports, ordering this stuff and finding researchers who would do this for me. And my wife was a programmer at the time. And so she said, you know, you really need to automate this and, you know, I could build you a simple database. Now, I'm not a technologist. And my first thing was, oh, you mean like Oracle? And she kind of like, you know, this is not something you need Oracle. She says, I could build you something at the time in Access, Microsoft Access. So what she did was she literally got VHS tapes, because this was in the 90s, watched beginning, intermediate, and advanced Access on Saturday morning. She said, let's go to lunch. She asked me what I needed from the clients, what I needed to send to the researchers, and what I needed back, and how to build a report. And then she programmed all Saturday evening, all Sunday. We launched it Monday morning. And that was the basis of how we started. And we just kept adding to that.
So for the people that are listening to really get it, what ended up being the business model of Accurate Background?
So we were wholesaling. So we were selling to other companies that needed the information. And then they would turn around and resell it. Okay. So we started doing that. And then for the first, you know, 6 months, that's all I did was just wholesale. And then we were approached by a large retailer in the West Coast who had gotten my name. And it said, you know, we're experiencing about 3 week turnaround and we don't think the data is that good. Is this something you can provide and how fast? And I told them, you know, most of their information would come back in 48 hours. They didn't believe me. We wanted to run a test. And we did it. And most of their information came back within 24 hours. And it was actually better than they were getting. So they signed on. And from that standpoint, over the next 5 years, I kind of transitioned away from the wholesale side of it and then just started working with end users. And then as I would get end user clients, I would talk to them, ask them what other products they needed, solutions I could sell them. And we started developing educational verification, employment verification products, you know, find a partner for driving records, and then we would aggregate all this into a report and return it to them.
So how do you guys make money today?
So it's very transactional in the sense where as a client is onboarding a new candidate, the background check process, when they order the background check after an offer has been made, that goes to us. And it can come to us in numerous ways, either directly through our system, right, where they can log on. But about 80% come through an integration with an applicant tracking system. So like through Oracle or SAP, which they're using as their applicant tracking system, all that information is parsed over to us. We'll run the report, and then the report goes back to the client.
So as you're looking back now in time, you know, because you've been at it now for quite a bit, you know, almost 27 years with the company, which is incredible. As you're looking back, what was that moment where you experienced that you guys were turning a corner here and that you were into something?
Well, I knew from the first month that I was on something. Okay. So, because there was definitely a need, because, you know, getting clients, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it was just something that the clients that I was getting, they were ordering pretty regularly, right? And so it was one of those situations where we just kept developing and going after, developing the network, making it better, streamlining the network, making improvements. Like if we go back to the 90s, it was very manual at the time. Now it's extremely automated. You know, we're integrated with court systems. It's very, very little human touch to the product now.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And how has it been through the journey of really scaling the business? Because, I mean, it's really remarkable how you got started with just $3,000. You didn't raise any money for the operations. And I'm just guessing, you know, like, why? Why was that the case? And then how did you go about scaling too?
So at the time, the business, if you look back in the 90s, the background screen business wasn't necessarily a sexy business that, you know, venture capital they were looking at it. It wasn't as big as it is now. You know, it was probably, you know, less than half a billion dollars industry. So now it's close to 5 billion. And if you take all the ancillary industries, it's probably closer to 10 billion. So it's really grown over the time, and the automation has actually helped that. So at the time, if you would have asked me, I just didn't know enough to go out and seek to raise money. You know, it was one of those things I just felt like, you know, as long as I keep grinding every day, and I just kept reinvesting everything I had back into the business.
So what was in that process too of as you're reinvesting, as you're building the business, you know, I'm sure that too the business went into different cycles, no? You know, every 18 to 24 months, you know, a business will change, you know, with the milestones, the goals. So I guess, how did you also develop yourself to really understand what you needed to give to the company to be able to continue to shift from one cycle to the next?
So as we were growing, so we were basically doubling our revenue every 2 years. Okay, so as we were growing, you know, I would seek out the people that would actually help me get to the next level, right? So when I was about $2 million, there was a person from the industry, from an operational standpoint, that had a lot of just knowledge of the industry. I brought her on, and she was with me for about 8 years as we grew. And then, you know, and then you bring on the right salesperson. Even though I could sell, you know, I knew I couldn't do everything. So we brought in, you know, a really good enterprise salesperson. Then we brought someone later on above that would lead the sales engagements.
And in this case as well, I mean, you guys have scaled the operation to 2,800 people. I mean, that's a lot of people too. So how did you go about making sure that the, you know, the culture, you know, the pillars were there and that people were able to row, you know, at the same time, you know, towards the same mission?
So a lot of that is culture building, right? So as we're hiring, you kind of know the people that you're bringing on. Are they a good fit, right? So it's, I always kind of look at it. Is this someone I want to have a long conversations with that have nothing to do with work, right? Just someone I get along with that I know on a day in, day out that we can be honest with each other, right? And grow. Do they have other experiences that they're bringing from other positions that are going to actually help that it will translate to what we're doing? So, you know, again, it's a lot of the people that, you know, they were the right person at the right time. And then they moved on to other successes. They've done, you know, other things that, and, you know, I never take it personal that someone wants to leave the company, right? And, you know, I wish them well because I know they were the right person at the right time at that for us. And they move on. We've had people who've left and actually come back. They get other experiences and they come back. We have, you know, there's probably more than a handful of people that actually have been able to scale with us. Those to me are the phenomenal stories of our business that, you know, they started out in a very kind of entry level position and have just grown. They just had that thing about them that are able to grow and they're like a sponge. They want to learn and they just grow and they're just doing great with us.
So what have you learned about people then? You know, you have so many employees, you know, the way that you guys have scaled is people going, people coming back, you know, new people coming in. What have you learned about people?
I think generally people want to do a good job. I mean, you know, the people are, they're with Accurate. I think Accurate's a really unique story where like in our industry, we have lots of people who've come from our competitors. We have very few people that ever leave us for our competitors. And, you know, they come in and, you know, last night we had our regional sales kickoff. And, you know, we had 160 people here in Huntington Beach. And it's a phenomenal feeling to be around these people. I mean, they're very excited about the product. They're very customer centric, right? They want to make sure the customers are getting what they need and the solutions to their problems. I think for us, having these type of people is what makes Accurate really special.
How do you typically go about, you know, to that point, just to double click on that, how do you go about understanding the real needs of customers?
Again, so a lot of it's communication, right? So customers a lot of times will come to us and say, these are the needs, this is what we're currently doing, and they think that's the way to do it. And then you start asking them, well, then what's your pain points? And then they'll start explaining to them, and then you kind of basically dissect what they're doing and say, well, this is what's causing the pain point. So let me change things for you to make it a better experience for not only the customer, but for their candidates. Because their candidates are the ones who are providing us the data. And so we want to make sure that it's a stressful time for them. They're trying to get a job. They're trying to get hired. We want to make sure the candidate has a really good experience as well.
So you guys were growing very nicely. I mean, you are now at north of $400 million in yearly revenue, which is incredible. And you decided, you know, and I guess, you know, given the timings and the space, you know, as you were alluding to it earlier, you know, and not taking like VC money or any of that stuff, eventually you open up the door to private equity firms. And I know that culture for you is a big thing. So how did you go about, you know, like really making sure that you were bringing the right investors for the right reasons when it came to the actual moment of raising money from those PE firms?
So the first time what happened was when I started, you know, we would get private equity inquiries throughout, and a lot of them just weren't a good fit. I started learning about the terms, you know, the preferred, participating preferred, the accrued interest, all these things. You started really understanding it. And it just wasn't something that for me at the time, I didn't really need it. And so it wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to, a path I wanted to go down. So in 2013, as we were growing, what I did do is I did take some debt and put it on the books just so I can have some operating capital. And then what happened is, as we were growing, that private equity firm actually wanted to have some ownership. And so I sold them actually a small piece of Accurate. So we, from that standpoint, we grew. But they were good partners. I'm actually, I get along very well with them. There's very open communication. And so they're still involved in Accurate, you know, 10 years later, they still have their same piece. They stayed on. They've been very happy with the investment.
So Dave, obviously, you know, as part of bringing on board investors, you know, all the employees that you have, really vision is a really big one, no? And it comes down really to being able to enroll people into the future, into what's possible. So I guess to that point, the question that I'd like to ask you is, imagine if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of Accurate Background is fully realized. What does that world look like?
Again, so our space, I think we're going to continue to grow. Our space is very fragmented, right? So you have some very large players. We're actually the largest privately held in the world. There's three publics ahead of us. There's literally hundreds of smaller mom and pop shops. Our space is going to continue to consolidate. I think that we will continue to be a consolidator in the space. We've acquired four companies over this time. There is definitely advantages of scale in this business, just from getting the data and the operation standpoint. I think the industry itself is evolving. I think eventually what's going to end up happening is the individual is going to really own more of their own data versus actually having to go to relying on outside sources like the courts and stuff. The individual will retain their data and will work more closely with the individual to make sure to help tell their story. So that's really where I see it. We're very similar to our industry is very similar to the credit bureaus. So if you go back, you know, probably the early 1900s, the credit bureaus, everything was very fragmented. Now there's really three players. And that's kind of where I see this industry going.
And I guess, you know, as we're talking about the future here, I want to talk about the past, but I want to talk about the past with a lens of reflection. Imagine if I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time to 97, where you got started with the company. Let's say I give you the opportunity of having a chat with that younger Dave that is looking at bringing something to life that is new, that is a solution, you know, to a problem that you encountered back then. And let's say you have the opportunity of giving that younger Dave one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
Obviously, hindsight, there's an advantage of hindsight. I would say, you know, continue doing what you were always good at doing, right? Just keep grinding, you know, follow your instincts. You know, don't always go down the path of what you others tell you, right? So understand the products, what the solutions. Listen to clients, you know, bring the right people around you, continue to bring the right people around you. So again, I obviously it's worked out for me. So I've been very happy. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if I look back on it, you know, people will say like, you know, why didn't you raise money and bring in venture capital, do all these other things. And a lot of it had to do with, I don't want to say ignorance, but it's a lack of knowledge of the space, which actually worked into my benefit. I think if I would have done it early on, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today. And the company wouldn't be worth that. It would have been a much different story.
That's amazing, Dave. So for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
I'm pretty easy to, you know, LinkedIn. I tend to be very responsive. I love helping people starting out. I get questions all the time. Anywhere I can help them, you know, on my journey as to what I've done, and I'm happy to give some advice of where what we've done and how I can help them. Right. So, you know, today I do a lot of, you know, early stage investing. I have some other investments that that I'm involved in. So I've taken my experiences and able to help these other companies grow their company.
Amazing. Well, hey, Dave, well, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today with us. It has been an honor to have you. Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's been fun.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.